In 2013, the Michigan Department of Corrections was sued by 7 inmates who first entered the adult prison system before their 18th birthday. They say the state failed to protect them from sexual and physical abuse from both other inmates and prison staff while housed in those facilities. The state has denied those claims. This spring, 2 of the journalists reporting on the lawsuit had their notes and other materials subpoenaed by the Office of Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette. Dana Liebelson from the Huffington Post was one of those reporters. The subpoenas were later withdrawn, but Liebelson says it's just one example of a frightening lack of transparency when it comes to the U.S. prison system. Her story on juvenile offenders housed in adult prisons was published last week along with an op-ed looking at the difficulties of reporting on prisons in the U.S. Dana Liebelson joins us now to talk about the article and those challenges of reporting. Welcome to Current State, Dana.
Thanks for having me.
Let's first revisit the lawsuit against the Michigan Department of Corrections. Give us just a brief summary of the charges that have been filed against the state, please.
Sure. So the plaintiffs in this case are charging that Michigan allegedly violated the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which says that, you know, youthful inmates have to be separated from adults by sight and sound. So the plaintiffs claim, you know, that wasn't the case for several years, and, you know, as a result, they suffered, you know, sexual abuse as well as other facets of prison life like solitary confinement and use of force.
When was the Prison Rape Elimination Act passed?
So the requirements for that act were finalized in 2012, but it was passed, you know, years earlier. And Michigan claims that they sort of started implementing this law in 2013. Some of the claims kind of take place before then.
Okay, the lawsuit does involve allegations before these barriers were put up, correct?
Before Michigan started implementing the law. The thing that is important to remember is that, you know, even though the law is in place, many states still have not fully implemented it.
Mm-hmm.
So Michigan is sort of not alone in that respect.
And talk to us about the state's response to these charges.
Well, you know, I don't think the state acknowledges that it did used to house kids with adult inmates before 2013. And, you know, so that sort of raises some serious questions about whether that would have been, you know, a good way to keep these kids safe. But I think Michigan sort of denies that they facilitated any sort of sexual abuse or anything like that of youthful inmates.
Well, all of that said, what do we know about the impact that the barriers have had on the number of sexual assaults reported?
You know, I think it's kind of hard to say because some of this data is really, really difficult to find. For example, I asked Michigan how many youthful inmates had been sexually assaulted over a 14-month period. And in order to give me that information, they asked for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for the FOIA office.
Mm.
So, you know, that sort of makes it difficult for anyone to know how effective implementation of this law might be.
Dana Liebelson of the Huffington Post is our guest. We're talking about her story that was just published a couple of days ago about her experience reporting on the Michigan Department of Corrections and the lawsuit filed by some inmates who say the state failed to protect them from sexual and physical abuse. In addition to looking at the allegations of sexual assault, you also looked into the day-to-day treatment of juvenile offenders in adult prisons, and videos that you obtained through the MDOC show inmates being forcibly removed from their cells by teams of prison guards. Talk to us about the context of those videos. What are we seeing when we look at those videos exactly?
Sure. Well, I think the important thing to remember in Michigan is that even though there are youth, and these are youth under 18, they are subject to the same disciplinary regime as adults. So, you know, that can include everything from lengthy time in solitary confinement to force, and they don't receive special access to education and programming. But, you know, children aren't adults, so that sort of raises some questions about their treatment. Some of the videos that I obtained show a practice called a cell extraction, where a youth is sort of forcibly removed from his or her cell and also restrained afterwards, sometimes for hours.
What kinds of behavior or infractions can result in one of these cell extractions?
you know, it can be everything from, say, a suicide attempt to, you know, cases we see in other states. It can be something as minor as a kid refusing to return a food tray after he's done eating. So that sort of raises questions like, do we need to have a militarized team to get a kid to give his food tray back? Mm. And, you know, I don't know if that's something that happens at most people's dinner tables.
How common are these cell removals?
Well, I think it's important to remember that cell extractions are only one part of a use of force in prisons. You know, other things that we see is maybe use of tasers. For example, in Michigan, I know that tasers were deployed at least 9 times on youth in about the last year. So, you know, I think there's a whole... Go ahead.
No, continue, please.
There's a number of these different kinds of force, and we don't know sort of how often they're used necessarily, because it can be very difficult to get a hold of that data in some cases.
Are these actions, though, these more extreme actions, are the prisons and is the state within their legal rights to utilize these kinds of practices?
I think under their policies, yes, absolutely. But I think when you sort of see some of these practices used against teenagers, you know, for the average person, it can look really extreme when you see this happening.
You also write that juvenile offenders in adult prisons are also subject to solitary confinement. Do you know how common the use of solitary confinement for juvenile offenders is, those who land in adult prisons?
I think in many facilities, including in Michigan, it's very common, whether it's used for, you know, protection of an inmate, which means, you know, maybe this inmate is threatened, so we're going to put them in solitary confinement while we figure out what to do with them, or it can be used as punishment. But, you know, I think solitary confinement is very controversial. It's been shown to have permanent, you know, damaging effects on the adolescent brain. So, you know, we sort of have to wonder, are there alternatives to, you know, solitary and things mm-hmm. like that?
Is there any special training for guards who will be working with prisoners who are under 18?
In Michigan, MDOC says that staff do receive some youth-specific training. I don't believe that training extends to, say, how youth might react to sexual harassment or sexual assault differently than adults. That's what they've told me.
Mm. Dana Liebelson is a staff reporter for the Huffington Post. We're talking about her recent reporting on the lawsuit filed against the Michigan Department of Corrections by inmates who alleged that they were sexually assaulted after being housed with adult prisoners when they entered the prison system as minors. What kinds of consequences do experts say adult prison has for people who enter the system as juveniles?
Well, you know, I think it's important to remember that because adolescents' brains are still developing, their patterns of behavior are not yet fixed. So, you know, that means on one hand they might have a far better chance of being rehabilitated than adults. Alternatively, they can also be more prone to permanent damage as a result of trauma. So, you know, that's why we do have a juvenile system, as every state does. And then that, you know, we have to wonder why kids are also being placed in the adult system where they might not have these shots at rehabilitation.
Are there mental health consequences then?
Yeah, I think experts would say there can be very serious mental health consequences to, you know, prolonged stress, which is sort of what kids can experience when they're in adult prisons.
How does Michigan compare to other states when it comes to the policies involving youth in the adult prison system?
Well, you know, I haven't looked at every single state. I do know that Michigan has automatically charged 17-year-olds as adults, so that sort of puts it in the minority. I think there's about 9 total states that do that. So, you know, I think Michigan is sort of, I use Michigan as an example of what's happening in several states and possibly many states around the country.
Have you looked at other countries by any chance?
You know, there's been reports that sort of show the U.S. is a major outlier on this. We have a number of countries that actually just ban the practice of trying youth as adults or putting youth in adult facilities, even countries that you wouldn't expect, like, say, Afghanistan. So I would definitely say the U.S. is a major outlier on this.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, you were subpoenaed by the Michigan Attorney General's office while reporting this story. Those subpoenas were later withdrawn, and Attorney General Bill Schuette apologized. But in another article you published last week, you pointed to this as an example of the challenges that journalists face when reporting on the prison system here in this country. What kind of access do journalists have to information about prisons in our country?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that it's very limited. You know, in Michigan, when I was allowed to at least go inside and interview inmates in the prison, but I wasn't allowed to bring a recorder. I wasn't allowed to bring a camera. And then I was subpoenaed for my handwritten notes, which, you know, had a chilling effect on my sources. On top of that, you know, the prison email system and the prison mailing system is routinely monitored by staff. So that can also make it difficult to communicate with inmates. So these are some pretty major challenges. So in terms of successful oversight and successful transparency, it can be hard to have those things when we sort of can't see what's going on inside.
You alluded to this earlier, Dana, but let's go back to this previous point about the financial costs of getting documents through FOIA, through the Freedom of Information Act. Can you talk to us about some of the financial barriers here to reporting on prisons?
Sure. I mean, I filed quite a few FOIA requests in the course of reporting on my story, and I think I ended up racking up something like over $70,000 in charges from the FOIA office. Naturally, I couldn't afford to pay that. My organization isn't going to pay that. So, you know, there are still routine reporting questions I have about Michigan that I can't answer because it's too expensive. So, you know, and that's not because Michigan is sort of running a racket or anything like that. It's more that the information is organized in a way that's very difficult and very time-consuming to search. So, you know, that's another sort of barrier to transparency, I think.
Mm. What do you think the impact is of having limited press access to the prison system?
You know, I think it can be both worrisome in terms of we don't know how inmates are treated, but alternatively, it also raises, you know, public safety questions. We want to make sure that, you know, our prisons are keeping people inside and everything's running okay, and it can be sort of hard to figure that stuff out when we don't have the access.
Once again, Dana Liebelson, staff reporter for the Huffington Post. We're talking with her about recent reporting on the lawsuit filed against the Michigan Department of Corrections by inmates who allege they were sexually assaulted after being housed with adult prisoners, and on various challenges reporting on the prison system. Do you think there are steps? I imagine you've thought about this. What are the steps that states or the federal government could take to make the prison system more transparent without compromising public safety?
You know, I'm not sort of an advocate, so I don't know if I would have a position on, you know, how to make it safer for youth or anything like that. But I do think that there could be legislation to sort of beef up reporting that happens in prison so that at least this data is available in, like, you know, a standard form that's in every state, which I think would sort of make the process a lot easier.
Dana Liebelson is a staff reporter for the Huffington Post. Her recent article, Cruel and All Too Usual, profiled the stories of several inmates who were sent to adult prisons here in Michigan when they were still under 18. We've been talking about that story and about the challenges that journalists like Dana face when reporting on the U.S. prison system. Dana Liebelson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.